getting to the Yukon with a good, steady team that's got a lot left in their tank is pretty important.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, you know, the Iditarod, which is a race about dog mushing that's seeing teams mush onto the Yukon River today. I'm your host, Casey Grove. The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM. That was ANIAC musher Richie Deal starting off today's episode. And before we head up the mighty Yukon, here's a quick word from Holly in Alaska Public Media's marketing department.
Calling all fans of the Iditapod, for a limited time only, you can receive an Iditapod sticker as a thank you gift when you donate online. Visit alaskapublic.org/Iditarod to support us today and keep your public media thriving.
Thriving, not just surviving here on this fine Friday. It's episode 7 of season 7.
Yeah, probably a pinch of luck in there.
That's right, Pete Kaiser, with a little luck, we'll have a race update for you. As Iditarod teams are passing through the village checkpoint of Anvik today and onto the Yukon River, we also have stories from earlier on the trail about how mushers were setting up their teams for those runs, with a little about the tiny village of Takotna reopening as an Iditarod checkpoint this year after closing down due to COVID. Then there will be an update from Jason Mackey about carrying his brother Lance Mackey's ashes along the trail. Lance, of course, the four-time Iditarod champion who passed away in September. We have a Mackey dog of the day named COVID, and a listener question about what the mushers are listening to, or whether they're listening to anything at all other than, you know, the sled runners and the dog's feet padding along. Well, as for how the race is going at the front of the pack, at the very front, but likely to be passed here pretty soon, is the team of defending champ Brent Sass, who blew through the Anvik checkpoint a little after 7 a.m. today, passing Jesse Holmes and Nick Petit, who had arrived there before him. Sass and co. took a right turn at Anvik to mush north onto the Yukon River, and then they blew through Grayling, too, at about race mile 530.
How's it going?
Hello, Brent.
Good to see ya. I'm just going through, but I'll...
All right.
Dogs are pulling good. And, yeah, it's just beautiful. It's cold. It's finally winter out there.
Yes.
We've had such a warm... race so far. That
yeah.
As forecast cooling off out there, it sounds like. But there was a hot meal for Jesse Holmes earlier when he arrived first in Anvik about 4 a.m. today as the first musher to the Yukon River. Holmes was ready for his first 8-hour layover. Mushers can opt to take that at any checkpoint along the Yukon. So he decided to stay and actually eat that gourmet 5-course meal provided by Mark's Brothers Cafe. Chef Jack Amon had whipped up lobster bisque garnished with a king crab salad creme fraiche, a Caesar salad, and then a filet mignon with a red wine demi-glace sautéed with maitake mushrooms, asparagus, and just about the fanciest-looking mashed Yukon gold potatoes I think I've ever seen. So while Holmes and Petit rested in Anvik, the teams of Richie Deal and Pete Kaiser, like Sass, went on through. Sass appears to be resting out on the Yukon River outside of Grayling. Pete Kaiser and Richie Deal, I think, are stopped in Grayling. And Matt Fahler, Kelly Maxner, Ryan Reddington, Jesse Holmes, Mille Porcild, and some others are heading out of Anvik as I am recording this. Of course, all that's going to change by the time you listen to this, but just to give you a sense of where the race is at, I would expect Sass to be passed at some point here because he still has not stopped to take that 8-hour rest on the Yukon River. Way back a little bit out of Ophir, that's about 200 miles behind the leaders, is rookie New Hampshire musher Greg Vitello in the Red Lantern position still. He's also about 40 miles or so behind the next musher, Gerhard Tiart. That's a fairly sizable gap compared to the rest of the back of the pack, so we'll see how Vitello is doing by the time he reaches the checkpoint of Iditarod. When mushers start to fall back that far, they start thinking about scratching sometimes, and sometimes that's at the suggestion of race officials. So, like we say often, we shall see. About one day and more than 100 miles ago, probably more now, the ghost town checkpoint of Iditarod was filled with those front-running mushers. Alaska Public Media's Ben Matheson has this story about how the tight pack of contenders were recalibrating their race strategies as the trail pushed through its most remote stretches.
Brent Sass did something uncharacteristic when he pulled into the Iditarod checkpoint Thursday afternoon.
How's it going?
Good, dude.
He stopped for a break.
Okay. Sounds good. So these are, I'm going to be here a couple hours, okay. At least 3 hours, maybe 4 hours.
Sass has almost completely avoided checkpoints in the last few years, choosing instead to grab straw and camp on the trail. But at the race's most remote checkpoint, the 2022 Iditarod winner wanted to get out of the sun.
Nothing about this race is on schedule for me, but it's on my fifth plan. I'm right on schedule.
He originally planned to run here for his 24-hour rest, but the warm weather nixed that plan. He took his long break 80 miles earlier in Ophir. Now he's on another pause, though this one much shorter. As the day pressed on, the race's top contenders filed into the ghost town. It's not much more than a few small cabins and wall tents across the river from collapsed, century-old buildings dating to the Gold Rush boomtown. Here, mushers eyeing a top-five spot got an extended look at their competition as they recalibrated their race plans. Sass is hoping for a better second half than his first after he dropped 3 dogs early in the race.
You know, don't really want to ever do that, but I had to, so I carried a bunch of dogs, so there was definitely some trials and tribulations in the beginning.
Sass fed frozen salmon to his team of 11, which he says are running strong, especially after their recent 24-hour break. An hour behind Sass was Jesse Holmes, who sped right through without stopping, possibly part of a move to get some distance between him and the teams in Iditarod. Wade Mars had been at the remote checkpoint since the middle of the night. His gambit was going all the way to the halfway mark before taking his 24-hour break.
He might come off this looking like $1 million and get a couple runs in and then see the effects of going too far, but at the same time, we might see the effects of going far enough, so could be really good.
Richie Deal was an hour and 10 minutes behind Sass coming into Iditarod. He ripped off his jacket under the hot sun and snacked his dogs with slabs of frozen pork belly, hoping to keep energy levels high for the next big chapter of the race.
Getting to the Yukon with a good steady team that's got a lot left in their tank is pretty important. And then once, you know, we can move up, because a lot of times Yukon's kind of a tough one to move up, you know, the wind and weather and stuff. But if our team's, you know, healthy and strong, I think should have a good run up the Yukon.
That stretch of trail was critical for positioning Pete Kaiser for his win in 2019. When Kaiser looked around the busy dog yard Thursday, he pointed out that no one has broken away with a decisive lead.
I guess we'll find out more in the next 100 miles or so, but right now it's probably anybody in this group's race, and then, you know, there's some strong teams behind us too.
For his part, Kaiser plans to keep a conservative schedule on the runs over the Sparse Hills to Shagluck and toward the Yukon River. He says he can't overdo it, knowing there are plenty of speedy teams ready to race. In Iditarod, I'm Ben Matheson.
You got your speedy teams, you got your slower teams, and then somewhere in the middle is everybody else. None of them are getting much sleep, but as much as they could get some sleep, mushers were catching those Z's earlier in Takotna. That village, after a decision by the village council, was not a checkpoint last year due to continuing concerns about the race exposing its roughly 50 year-round residents to COVID. As we'll hear in this story from Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan, the council voted this year to allow the village to be a checkpoint. At the top of this story, though, Lex caught up with mushers in the dogyard in Takotna.
In the dogyard outside of the Takotna checkpoint, musher Bridget Watkins is getting rid of some ice that's frozen into her sled runners, her tool of choice, the back of a hand axe.
Even down here, see, like, look under my, see, there's ice, and that's all weight. So if you don't get that stuff out, it's just extra weight that you're trying to get out that you don't have to have.
Her sled is turned upside down to drain out the water from the rain the day before. But Watkins says overall she's had a pretty smooth race so far, especially compared with her rookie run last year, where she was forced to drop out due to bad weather shortly before the Nome finish line. Now in Takotna, she's made it about a third of the way into this race. She's one of the last mushers to leave the checkpoint after finishing her 24-hour mandatory rest. She's slept a lot.
I don't know, probably 16 hours or more. I make it my priority. I didn't sit and chit-chat or dilly-dally. I just took care of dogs, went right back to sleep. Ate, went right back to sleep. So,
sleep is high on the minds of many mushers during their 24-hour rests. Takotna, with a population of about 50 people, is an ideal place for some mushers to get some quiet. But in the bunkhouse, there's plenty of snoring mushers. Christian Turner has a hack he learned from his 5-month-old daughter.
I put on my baby girl's shusher app in my ears, and it's just like, just puts me to sleep.
Ramey Smith says a recent cold that clogged his ears means he doesn't have to worry too much about being awakened by other mushers snoring. He says he enjoys everything about Takatna.
The vibe is really nice here, and people are nice, and you just can't beat Takatna.
Inside the checkpoint, a bustling two-story wood building on the riverbank, there's plenty for mushers to satiate their hunger, too. The community's known for its abundant and delicious pies, which the school and other residents donate for the Iditarod. This is the first time Takatna is a checkpoint in a couple of years due to COVID-19. 37-year resident and local checkpoint manager Tabitha Maglich says it's exciting.
It feels really good to be back.
Still, she says there are community members who are concerned. Maglich says some high-risk people in the community are avoiding the crowds. The tribal council opted out of hosting the Iditarod this year, but voted to allow the race to come through town. Maglich, who's been volunteering with the Iditarod since she was 5 years old, says she stepped up.
Came in to me last minute, and then the council said, we're allowing it, but we're not in charge of it. And I was like, okay, well, I have 2 weeks to get food.
She says based on the tables filled with hamburgers, salmon, cake, and pies, it's worked out. Musher Eric Kelly, getting ready to leave after his 24-hour rest, agrees. He's tested out a variety of the pies.
I had banana cream pie, apple pie, and one I'm not even sure what it was. It was just good.
It's his second year running, but his first on the Iditarod slightly longer southern route, so it'll be new trail for him.
You know, I'm excited. I'm not even nervous.
With some hours of rest and pies filling his belly, he says he's ready for whatever the long stretches of lonely trail ahead throw at him. Reporting from Takatna, I'm Lex Trinan.
So, not to bring the mood down too much, but the Iditarod Trail is probably feeling a little lonelier for Jason Mackey this year. That's after his brother Lance Mackey passed away in September. But in a way, both brothers are again on the trail together this year. That's because Jason's carrying Lance's ashes on his sled.
I just knew I was taking him to Nome with me. I mean, no questions asked.
Lance is the honorary musher of the race. As the four-time champion who helped grow the sport and inspire people with his stories always straight from the heart about facing cancer and addiction. As he mushes to Nome, Jason Mackey says he's been thinking a lot about a conversation with Lance on Father's Day when Lance knew he was sick again.
He shook my hand, gave me a hug, and said, it's your turn. And I didn't really know what he meant by that, but after giving it a lot of thought, I don't think that he meant that it was my turn to win. I just think that more than anything, he just believes in me.
He's keeping the ashes in a secure bag in his sled right next to his trail mail and mandatory gear. He spread some of the ashes at Rainy Pass early in the race.
So I was at the monument, the elevation monument there at the top of the gorge when I did it. And of course, it was an emotional thing. Well, I got 14 screaming crazy dogs in front of me, and away we went down the gorge. And, you know, of course, I was crying and on to a luge ride.
Mackey was considering spreading more ashes around Ophir and again at the end of the race.
I think maybe I might wait until I get to Nome when the race is over and I can then, because it's not easy. It is not easy.
Mackey says it's not a ceremonial run for Lance, but he knows that the trail was home for his brother.
A guy can only be so tough. I mean, I'm pretty damn tough. But when you're talking about your brother or a loved one and having to let go of them in the situation that I'm having to, and I don't have to, and ain't nobody forcing me to do it, but I know that's where he loved to be more than anywhere.
Jason says he feels that Lance has been with him since before and after he died, and his dogs are actually now part of the team. Four of the dogs Jason is running came from Lance's kennel, and we're going to stick with those Mackey dogs for our dog of the day. And, you know, we heard about COVID concerns in Takatna earlier. Now we have a dog named COVID. He's a leader Jason got from Lance's kennel.
When Lance Harness broke Cove, he said, this is who I'm going to build my kennel around. And he really is a special dog. He's 2 years old, but he just has the willingness to please. He's got the drive. He's got everything it takes to be an outstanding lead dog. So I run him up front quite often, but I don't like putting all the pressure on him, but I foresee seeing him at the finish line in Nome and lead for sure. COVID, come here. Come here, buddy. Come here. Come here.
You know, I get a sense of what the name is from, but is there anything more to that story?
So I don't know. I do know that he was the only one that survived out of the litter, and it was during the COVID pandemic. So I think that's how his name became. But again, at harness breaking. He was just a phenomenal dog, and to the point of, I'm going to run him in lead, ran him in lead, and he's an absolute natural lead dog. So with all the characteristics that you want in a leader. So
as just a two-year-old, huh?
As a two-year-old, yeah. So, yeah, he's outstanding. He's so ugly, he's cute. He's got the weirdest look to him I've ever seen in a dog, but really. And so Zorro, the famous Zorro, is his grandfather. So the lineage is all same stuff, as well as my kennel. Everything goes back to the same stuff. Like I said, we've bred for years.
Yeah, that's pretty uncommon to have a two-year-old as your main leader. That's like a youngish teenager in dog years. And a shout out to Zorro there, one of the Iditarod's most famous dogs who helped lead Lance Mackey to several victories. My own young pup was originally named Zorro before we gave him a new name, Theo. And shortly thereafter, I started calling him Bubs, then Boo Boo, and a bunch of other things, including more recently Doo Doo or Doo Doo Butt. Well, we heard about a dog who got a new name in yesterday's episode. That was Senior, named after Iditarod founder Joe Reddington Sr. You can find photos of Senior and all of those good dogs of the day at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. That's a recurring feature here on the Iditapod, just like our listener questions. And now it's time for today's listener question.
Hey, Iditapod. This is Emily in Bellingham, Washington. I am wondering what mushers listen to while they're out there in the wilderness for so long. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love this one. And I love a lot of funny music. And I think that you can figure out a lot about a person's personality by knowing what they listen to when they're all alone. So I think it'd be really funny to hear a little bit about the kinds of songs people get stuck in their head while they're out there. Are they singing to their dogs? Are they talking to their dogs? Are they listening to books? Are they in the middle of a murder mystery while they're crossing some creepy icy lake? I just would love a little peek into their lives. Thanks. Love your show.
Thanks for the question, Emily. Here are some answers courtesy of Ben and Lex from several mushers. This is Pete Kaiser, Eric Kelly, Jason Mackey, Ramey Smith, Kelly Maxner, and Bridget Watkins in that order.
There's nothing, no consistency to my music. There's a little bit of everything, every genre. So yeah, it's a complete mix.
I had a dream. I got everything I wanted.
I listen to music. I got a lot of Grateful Dead in there, a lot of Billy String.
Normally I don't, but now I do, yeah.
And can I ask, yeah, what's the soundtrack?
So I just got a playlist. So my wife and my son's girlfriend put 450 songs on there, so it's just random stuff.
I mean, is it pop music? Is it classic rock? Is it rap? What's...
No rap. No rap. Everything from country music to kid rock, you know, all the goodies.
I've been down the Mississippi, down through New Orleans. Yes, I have.
Do you ever listen to music or anything on headphones while you're running?
I never have.
Why not?
I like to stay focused on the dog, but you know, I thought about it. I'm sure certain people could be a good idea. If you were just there for the trip, it would probably be real smart.
I do a little bit, but not a lot. I like to just kind of just think with my thoughts and think of my dogs. But when I got really, really tired, so my kids are really into Wings of Fire. So it's a dragon series, kind of like Hunger Games, but not quite that extreme. But so I'm on book three of that. So that's what I listened to on the way over here.
The largest egg in Mountain High will give to you the Wings of Sky.
Question, do you listen to music? And if so, what's been getting you through?
I do. I listen to a lot of things on my on my headphones. Music, some. I had a couple of my friends, Jen and Autumn, they downloaded all kinds of music, and it's highly entertaining because it's some of it's completely inappropriate stuff I would never listen to. So that entertains me some. But no, really what I like to listen to is I like to listen to books and podcasts that I already have downloaded. Well, there's a Mel Robbins book that I just listened to. It's called The 5-4-3-2-1 Rule. And I've actually been using it on this race because what it talks about is like, you know, don't wait to do whatever you want to do in life. You just got to do it 5-4-3-2-1 go.
Pete Kaiser, Eric Kelly, Jason Mackey, Rainey Smith, Kelly Maxner, and Bridget Watkins there, along with music by George Clinton, Billie Eilish, The Grateful Dead, Waylon Jennings, Ariana Grande, a clip from Wings of Fire, a sample somewhere in there, and then the Go Team at the end. And, oh hey, here's the band Sassafras with our theme music. You know what that means. Wah, wah. That's all the time we have for today. Stay tuned for another full episode in your podcast feeds tomorrow. In the meantime, you can find more of our Iditarod coverage at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. Our theme music, again, is by the band Sassafras. Thanks to our Iditapod reporters Lex Trinan and Ben Matheson. And thanks to Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon for editorial support. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Thanks for listening. And until next time, happy trails.